Failed Death Saves is a fictional crime podcast set in a homebrew fantasy world. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either products of the writer's imagination or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, or actual events is purely coincidental. It also depicts acts of violence that may not be suitable to all listeners. David Carligel was a criminal. He was born to poor working-class parents, and from his earliest years, he was always getting into trouble. The first run-in with the law he ever had was when he was 7 and set free all the horses tied up at a local bar. Once the horses were untied, he spooked them all with a firecracker, resulting in a small stampede through the center of town. When the patrons ran out of the bar after the horses, David went inside the bar to steal the money left behind at the various card and dice games. He was lucky and wasn't caught until after the horses were collected. But some people in town weren't so lucky, as several people were harmed in the stampede, more than a few having serious injuries. His criminal career started then and continued on for many years. With each act of criminality, he grew bolder and more violent. In his teens, David would run extremely simple snatch-and-grab schemes where he would run by elderly people and grab whatever bags they might be holding and take off. His plans were not complicated, nor were they particularly lucrative, but David's luck was deep and always seemed to result in his just barely getting away. The money he managed to get from his older targets was barely enough to support him, as he had left home when he turned 12 and never looked back. Sometimes he found jewelry or something that he could sell for more money, but his choice in targets were easy marks and therefore didn't have much coin on them. His first break, such as it was when he started to collect various tinctures and medicines from the elderly he robbed and selling them. There wasn't a whole lot of money in selling the joint medicine and creams that were the usual catches, but there was a large aftermarket in some of the distillates that could be produced from some of the drugs. A somewhat popular joint tincture, called Medical Mary's Jointies, had a chemical that could be distilled from large quantities of the medicine, and then used on the creation of the drug Dragon's Lotus, a very addictive and destructive drug. David lucked into a much more profitable criminal enterprise from stealing from the elderly. He could keep any coin or valuables they had on them, but their medicine could be sold to drug makers for vast sums comparatively. It was doing those jobs that David met Hopal Barthel. The halfling was a minor alchemist that worked synthesizing drugs to sell through the criminal element. David and Hopal had only two things in common. They were both criminals, and they both wanted to live a fast and extravagant life. They instantly became fast friends. It was through Hopal that David found his greatest addiction, Devil's Root. The drug was highly illegal in almost every nation in the world, as it was highly addictive and gave the user a slim glance into the future. The side effect to this was that the user also experienced vivid visions of the hells, and extended use of the drug almost always results in the user experiencing intense psychotic damage that can, at worst, leave the users in catatonic states. David was immediately hooked. He claimed that his slim glances of the future were crucial to his crimes, which also changed drastically with David's new life. The two friends spent their nights making drugs, or rather, Hopal made drugs, and David supplied materials as best as he was able, and then spent their mornings sleeping off their drug-induced altered states. After a few weeks, David realized that stealing purses and bags wasn't going to cut it for much longer. He claimed that a vision given to him by inhaling some potent devil's root had given him a crystal-clear vision of the future, where he would make a living by stealing drugs from other alchemists and give it to Hopal, who could make bigger and better drugs. This was likely a lie, as any users of the drug report to only catch glimpses of the future a few seconds in front of them. No more than a minute has ever been documented. Even extensive studies by the Mountain Fall College only produced inconclusive evidence of the efficacy of the future visions. But it didn't change the trajectory that David was now determined to follow. The criminal didn't change tactics or prepare for anything new for his new goal of robbing other drug makers. David planned on going in and stealing as much as he could carry and running away. It shouldn't have worked as well as it did. The alchemists and their labs were usually well protected by the various gangs that they worked under, but David was, once again, unnaturally lucky, and he managed to do the first couple of robberies by simply walking in, pretending to bring things to sell, knocking over various alchemical equipment as a distraction, taking supplies, and turning away before anyone could catch him. He always managed to just get away or slip under the notice of the guards for long enough to get away. His luck held long enough for him to get out of the lab with as many supplies as he could carry, which brought him more money than he had ever seen before. Hopal worked for the criminal element, who had paid David a hefty sum for his stolen supplies, as they liked to profit their own drug trade at the expense of their rivals. However, he was too reckless and dim-witted to be brought fully into the organization. With his new reckless crimes paying off, David grew richer, emboldened, and even more addicted to Devil's Root. He began smoking right before any of his smash-and-grab jobs. He felt that the drug gave him extra strokes of luck that would enable him to take more, or get away even better than he always had before. His luck was not infinite, and the gangs that he was stealing from over and over again were taking steps to stop the thief. He was proving to be hard to catch, and harder to stop, as it was impossible to guess when or where David would strike. The thefts were not planned, there were no accomplices to rely on, and finding the one dirty criminal who was stealing from them from the sea of petty criminals in Bensom was not an easy feat. So the alchemists did the one thing that they could, and hired more security. More well-armed and strong people at the sites that David would rob from did not deter him. He thought he was unstoppable, uncatchable, so there was no obstacle that could be placed in front of him that would keep him from getting away. The first time David encountered any trouble was when he was stealing from another lab and the thugs guarding it actually managed to corner him. But David wasn't going to be caught so easily. He had already made it inside of the drug lab and threw something that he was trying to steal at one guard while lashing out with a jagged dagger at the other. It was good luck for David, terrible luck for the guards, as the package that David threw was unrefined planar spike, which burst open and covered the guard. The one that David attacked with the knife was cut very badly under the arm, as he botched the block of David's frenzy attack. One of the guard's major arteries was cut, which caused him to start bleeding profusely. Planar spike in its raw form is an extremely potent drug that is used only in small amounts and some very high-level magic as a component. But when ingested in a tincture, the user experiences intense euphoria. The thug was covered in the drug, which caused an almost instant overdose. His death was not easy, nor was it quick. With the violent deaths of the two guards and the stunned silence of the other two, David wasted no time in taking everything he could and running. It was the first time David had killed anyone. Instead of causing him to question his actions, or seek a more careful tactic that wouldn't put him in such a dangerous position, David came to think of himself as invincible. He was unstoppable, and he was the luckiest man alive. His crimes only grew bolder and more brazen. After his robbery and murder, David was the richest he'd ever been. But now that he was unkillable, why should he have to pay for anything at all? It would be a few days before David would resume his life of criminal activity. He had to first celebrate his stunning victory in murders by indulging in his favorite activity. Once his drug-induced victory haze had subsided, David decided that his new unstoppable lifestyle deserved some upgrades. So he left his shoddy ramshackle apartment and went to go shopping. Without a second thought, David went straight for the richest part of the shopping district in Bensom. By the time he had woken and made his way to the shopping district, it was already well into the night, so almost every store was closed. That was not going to stop or deter David, who looked through the windows, and if he saw anything he wanted, he broke in and took it. Because it was so late, there was almost no one in the streets to even try and stop him. David had entered three different stores and taken some new clothes, shoes, and some expensive accessories, like some rich hats and scarves. When he spotted a jeweler still open, he walked in and started handling the diamonds and other rich stones. The elderly proprietor, a man named Wesley Vormack, approached him and asked, "My good sir, it is late and the store is closed. We can set up a meeting tomorrow if you come in and inspect some of our wares, but I must ask you to leave." The thief didn't even look up, just stabbed Wesley twice in the chest before taking several rings and depositing them in his bag. When he was done taking what he wanted, David looked at the dying old man and realized that he got blood all over his new clothing. "You ruined my new suit!" David yelled in a sudden rage as he kicked the body several times. "You owe me, old man!" In retaliation for the murdered man ruining his new suit, David broke open several glass display cases and took the items inside. With his newfound loot and ruined suit, David decided that his shopping trip was over. He'd gotten some stuff he wanted, but he was tired. It had been several hours since he indulged in his favorite hobby, so he was going to call it a night and started heading back to his squalid home. He was only about 100 feet away from the dead jeweler when he was spotted finally by a pair of guards. They saw a strung-out man covered in blood carrying bags of loot. They quickly tackled him and brought him down, slapping a pair of manacles on him. David's luck for the moment seemed to have run out. As the two guards were in the process of arresting David and all of his stolen loot, a scream pierced the otherwise quiet street. A magical trap that was inside the Vormack jewelry shop, which would have been activated when the owner locked up the shop, was triggered in the destruction caused by David. A passerby noticed the flame trap that should have burned any unlucky thieves had caught the floor of the building on fire. A citizen walking by noticed the flames, and then screamed when they noticed that there was someone inside the shop. "By the gods!" the citizen yelled. "Help! There's someone in the fire! Help! Guards!" The guards arresting David heard the cries, and in good conscience, couldn't leave the person trapped by the fire to die to arrest a thief. A shame that no one knew that they were trying to save a dead man. Devil's luck David had one more lucky break. As the guards left him to try and save the dead Wesley, he leapt up and ran off into the night, leaving behind the guards and his loot. He ran all the way back to his apartment, where he spent the rest of the night freeing himself from the manacles. The fire at Vormack's was quickly extinguished, and the guards suffered only minor injuries, saving the dead body of Wesley. Once they realized that the thief they were arresting was also a murderer, the search for David started in earnest. But he was long gone, and the trail had gone cold. However, David was not the type to lay low. It was simply against his character. He was extremely angry that his new loot, things that he believed were rightfully his since he had taken them, was determined to get them back, by any means. And for David, any means meant doing something very bold and very stupid. The following morning, David walked up to the guard station nearest to the jewelry shop he robbed and murdered the owner of. Before he entered, he took a big hit of devil's root and walked right inside. The lucky devil managed to slip into the back rooms of the station, away from the public with little trouble. Those that might have spotted him or tried to stop him were momentarily distracted by something else, or had missed him entirely. David knew that the devils of his drugs were on his side, and he was unstoppable. He found the locked vault where all the evidence was stored, and where he assumed all of his new valuables would be found. Unfortunately, it was closed and locked up tight. Not content to sit back and wait for someone to enter the vault and spring on them, David tried to break into the secure evidence vault. He was neither skilled enough with lockpicks to succeed on the almost impossible task, nor was he smart enough to figure out another way into the vault. So instead, David tried to brute force open the vault, which caused a lot of noise. All the luck in the world could not have saved David from an impossible task, or his insurmountable stupidity. Rank 1 guard Feraldo Fretzweller rounded the corner to see what all of the fuss was about at the vault. Instead of seeing a frustrated guard who forgot something, they saw a small, dirty, blood-covered waif of a man beating at the vault door trying to get in. David clearly didn't belong. "Stop that, you! You're under arrest!" Feraldo yelled as he advanced on David, intent on arresting him for attempting to break and enter. But David felt unstoppable and invincible, so he couldn't be stopped by this lone guard. He drew his rusty dagger and savagely attacked the guard. The lightning blitz against the guard caught him totally off guard. The only thing that saved him was that David wasn't smart enough to know that the guard was still alive, and that all the blood was from deep but non-life-threatening wounds. It certainly helped that David was also distracted by the set of keys on the guard's belt. David snatched the keys and instantly tried them each on the vault. He eventually found the one that worked and pulled open the vault. David giggled with delight as he entered the vault and saw the riches that lay there. Feraldo lay on the floor, bleeding and cut deeply. He knew that he wasn't going to die right away, and that his only chance at surviving the attack was that this criminal was too dim to notice that he was still breathing. He was too weak to do anything to stop the criminal, but he knew that he had one chance to warn the other guards in the station. He waited until David had entered the vault. Once he was inside, and line of sight was broken, Feraldo dragged himself slowly away from the vault. There was a security whistle on the wall. If he could pull it, he could alert the entire station that there was something wrong in the evidence vault. David was too excited by all the things to pay attention to the guard that he thought was dead. First, he found all of the things that he had stolen the night before, marked in evidence. He snatched it all up, but he couldn't leave the guard evidence vault without taking a look at the other treasures the cops had taken from noble criminals like himself. He hit the jackpot pretty quickly when he noticed a small stash of drugs in the corner. David couldn't help himself. He grabbed the assorted drugs and took some samples of the intoxicating and illicit substances. Guard Feraldo managed to make it to the wall. It took all of his strength to get that far, and he was losing blood at an alarming rate. He could feel his vision starting to fade and get strangely distant. But he had to hit the warning whistle, or this could happen to someone else. It felt like he had to move the entirety of Jilkar to stand up, and then to get his arm up to reach the magical device. But once he had accomplished the impossible, activating it was simple. He had to pull the trigger down. Down was easy. Down was where the floor was. Down was where he wanted to go. Feraldo pulled the trigger down, which caused an ear-splitting screech to burst throughout the entirety of the guard station. Then he blacked out, falling to the floor. David almost didn't hear the alarm, as taken with the drugs as he was. When he did hear it, he knew that he should probably leave. He knew he was lucky and unstoppable, but he wasn't an idiot. There were too many guards for him to take on personally. Oh, that was a thought. David should hire a minion when he got out of here. Someone to help carry all his loot. He could afford a minion with all of his loot. The guards of the station were momentarily caught flat-footed by the sound of the alarm. Few of them have ever heard it go off, and even fewer knew what it was supposed to mean. The station commander, however, knew what was happening. "Get to the vault, you dull shits!" he bellowed to the guards who were wondering what was going on. That, more than anything else, assembled the guards to action. David was already running out of the vault, carrying as many things as he could possibly hold in one hand, and a bloody dagger in the other. The guards were surprised at the flurry of the man's attacks and frantic running. He was more feral animal than rational being. A few guards sustained superficial damage as David ran through the station, swinging his weapon wildly as he ran, desperately towards the exit. His luck held out long enough for him to run past the guards and out the front door. It even held as they started firing both physical and magical projectiles at the crazed thief. David dodged bolts, arrows, and spells with reckless abandon. He felt like he was home free, so even though he was only 40 feet outside of the guard station, being pursued by every single guard in the station, David turned to mock the guards. His luck failed him then. He got hit by a cantrip, one that made him feel terribly cold and made him feel slow. Realizing that he had no hope of getting out of this one, David dropped most of the loot and turned to run. He had finally discovered that he was not invincible. He could very much be stopped, and that this was a terrible idea. The guards were gaining on him. He tried to put on another burst of speed to get away, but he was hit by another ray of frost and couldn't seem to go as fast as he normally would. There was also a lethargy that was starting to hit him from all of the drug use. The drugs he did in the vault were exquisite, but he was starting to feel sluggish. Devil's Luck David was finally stopped 60 feet outside of the guard station when he was subdued by half a dozen guards. David was arrested and was reported to have extensive injuries caused in the course of his arrest. It was probably due to his luck that he lived to see court, as Guard Feraldo was gotten to in time and saved, making a full recovery after his attack by David. If the guard had died, David would likely not have survived to see court. Having finally been arrested, David confessed almost immediately to every crime he ever committed, which was much more than the guards knew about, so the court hearing for his sentencing was long and extensive. While it was his good fortune that saved David's life before court, after he was sentenced, his luck once again ran out. David was killed in prison less than 7 hours after he arrived. The numerous gangs he had stolen from had finally caught up to him. Failed Death Saves was written by a mastermind with no plan, Matt Bresnahan, and performed by a plan with no steps, Luke Van Martin. You can find Matt at Stalked by Trains on Instagram, and Luke at Ace McChips on Instagram. You can follow this podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Failed Death Saves Podcast. Please leave us a review and share this episode, and try to roll high.